You are listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, or Baum. I hope you're having a wonderful week, whether you're listening days later or you're listening right now or watching. Hi, thank you for watching you right there. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the love and the subscribing to the podcast. If you're here for Sebastian Roche, then I hope you will stick around for weeks to come and subscribe to the podcast. And you can subscribe to the podcast, Ryan.
On Spotify, Stitcher Premium, youtube.com/Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Baum.
Yeah. And then follow on Twitter at Inside of You Pod. And then Instagram, Facebook at Inside of You Podcast.
Podcast, that's correct. And if you're digging the show, tell us about it. Write a review. Hello at Inside of You podcast.com.
Podcast.com.
Hello at insideofyou.com.
Hello at insideofyoupodcast.com.
I was right.
Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah. So you could write a review and write a review actually on, you know, on Apple. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Write a review there and give us a 5-star, if you will. But last week, David Harewood really let it go. He talked about mental health and how he went away to a mental hospital. And God love him, man. Thank you for being so upfront, honest. It was really a powerful episode. If you haven't heard it, David Harewood from Supergirl's done a Martian Manhunter. He's done a bunch of stuff, but he was the Martian Manhunter on Supergirl. And I urge you to listen to that. Also, the Jason Patrick, Kiefer Sutherland episode, Charisma Carpenter. Mm-hmm. We got great ones coming up. Also, if you want any Inside of You merchandise or Lex Luthor, lunch boxes, T-shirts, hats, tons of stuff on Inside of You. Inside of You online store, that is. And the number, the code today for 15% off is what give me something.
Ryan's waxed 15.
That's Ryan's, no apostrophe, waxed, WAXED. Ryan's waxed 15.
Because last week was Ryan's vaxed 15.
Ryan's vaxed 15 was last week. Ryan's waxed 15 this week.
Yep.
We're getting creative, folks. Thank you for coming to my stage it and supporting the band Sunspin. Every last Saturday of the month, we play two shows, 2 p.m., 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We have prizes, Zooms, all that. We really appreciate it. It was a great turnout. So thank you. It was our 1-year anniversary of playing shows. We'll have one at the end of next month on a Saturday, the last Saturday of every month. And if you want to book the band, or you want to Zoom with the band, or you want merch from Sunspin, just go to sunspin.com and you can get everything there. It's a lot of fun. And we book Zooms with people throughout the week, and it's pretty fun. Today's guest is someone that, well, I know. I've met him at conventions. Very personable guy, funny, talented, and boy. This story blew Ryan away. Ryan thought this was like the best episode in a long time. And this guy, talk about, I can barely have fucking dinner with my family for an hour. Imagine living on a boat.
Living on a boat.
With your mother and your family for not a week or a month, but a long time. It gets pretty dicey. It's a great story, Sebastian Roche. Let's get inside of Sebastian Roche.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you today, Sebastian Roche. We met in England,
in
somewhere?
Wales, near Wrexham. Yeah.
Wrexham.
It was a pleasure, actually, to meet you, because I'd heard about you for so many years, you know, through other people who knew you. I can't remember who, but, you know, they always spoke, you know, wonderfully about you. And I have to admit, I was really happy to meet you, because you're not only super funny, you know, but also, you know, one quality I thought with you is you're incredibly caring. I always remember when Joey Pants was out of the bus. Do you remember when Joey?
Oh, yes.
You were like, we got to do something. Wait, where's
So we'll set it up for the listeners so it's not just an inside.
Yeah, sorry.
But we're on a bus and we're doing a convention and we all have to get on a bus to so they could take us to do a signing and meet and greet. And so so there, I set it up. So go ahead. What is Joey Pants from, you know, guys from Goonies, from everything, Matrix? What was he doing?
Joey Pants was like on the bus. And then he thought it was taking too long to get there because there was a huge, it was quite a bit of traffic jam, you know, because a lot of people go to. Yeah, do you remember? We were on the bus.
Yeah, I got to remember.
And then Joey Pants was like, you know what? I gotta get off. I got to get off.
Yeah, he's like,
what the fuck? What are we doing here? I'm getting the fuck off this bus. I can walk faster than this big fucking piece of shit.
And he gets off the bus and he's going and I'm videotaping. I have this video of him walking and walking and walking. And I put funny music over it. It's just Joey Pants walking.
And he didn't know actually where he was going, I think. But he was like, there's this big thing I'm going to go to. But it was just, he never does this in a... He's such a nice man.
He really is.
Didn't you love him instantly?
Loved him.
He has this extraordinary personality, total New York, but you can't not love him, you know?
Yeah, he's sweet. He's like, yeah, we're doing this. I mean, my daughter, we went through Ireland and it was, I don't know, I'm doing a Joe Pesci. I'm not even doing it.
Yeah, but he's such a young, and then I saw his age. He's nearly 70, right? And I was like, incredible. Holy shit, I want to have that much energy. Can we swear on your...
Oh, I have been, and I usually don't swear a ton, but some people, my listeners, the patrons, are probably going, Rosenbaum's been swearing today. He's on fire. Yeah, you could swear. You could swear.
Yeah, your podcast is great. And, you know, I noticed how much you always care about people, and I think that's it's a quality that I always, you know, admire in people. You know, so that's one of the things I was really touched to see someone because everywhere we went, you were really caring about people. And it's something I noticed about you, instantly.
Well, that's nice. That hasn't always been. I just started caring about people. But about the time I saw you, I was.
Exactly. Yeah. You were the total asshole. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you could tell me your story, but I don't look. We're obviously not perfect and we make mistakes. And through life, we try to strive to get to a certain age where we're like, okay, I love myself. I'm happy with myself. I'm better as a person. I've grown. And there's certainly times in your life where you, I'm sure you've been an asshole. I've been an asshole. We've been assholes. And,
oh my God.
And we look back and we're like, you know, immaturity, you had no self-awareness. Was there a time in your life where you feel like you had a little bit of that?
Oh my God. I think when I was younger, you know, I don't know if I told you, but I lived, you know, on a boat for 6 years from the age of 12 to 18.
Unbelievable. With your mom and your brother, was it?
With my mom and dad, my brothers, you know, we were pretty much went halfway around the world because we didn't go into the Pacific, but we were on a sailing boat, you know.
How big is this boat? Paint the picture. How big is this?
So the boat is 44 feet, which is, you know, for people who know the metric system, is like 13 meters 50. It's not that big. And we're not talking about, you know, we didn't go on a
weekend sailor. All right. Yeah.
Vacation. This is hardcore sailing on a boat that is, you know, has all the basics. It doesn't have much electronics. You know, we didn't even have hot water. We, you know, it was hand pumps to get water, foot pumps actually. So we're on a boat that was designed for the Caribbean. And we started, of course, in the middle of winter. You know, my dad was like, we sailed on this boat and it was, you know, very exciting, but very, very difficult at the same time because we were, you know, within, I think, less than a year, we were totally broke. But you know what? It was actually one of the great things of being on the boat. We learned so much about life. You know, I was living a very sort of upper middle class. My dad was a kind of a CEO. We were living in the outskirts of Paris because I am half French, half British. And then my dad was like, I never see my kids. So we're going to go. We'd sailed a lot as children. My dad was a big sailor. And he was like, that's it. Selling the house, quitting my job, and we're off. So that's basically the premise. And, you know,
wow.
We sailed, you know, the whole, this was 1977.
And how long? Yeah, 1977. The dead of winter, you're starting. Your dad has what sounds like a midlife crisis, or he just really wants to find himself and have his family understand the real world. And you go on a, well, not a cruise, a sailboat, 44-foot sailboat for how long? And how long are you guys on at any given time, the longest stretch where you're on the sailboat without land?
The longest stretch was we sailed from Madeira, which is north of the Canary Islands, which is off the coast of West Africa. And we sailed from Madeira to across the Atlantic for 21 days to Barbados. So that was 3 weeks at sea without seeing.
And you don't get sick. Does anybody get sick in the beginning and then get over it? Is there Dramamine in 77?
Yeah. It's really interesting how the body works. At first you are, you know, we were in, I remember everyone got sick when we hit, we were in Southern Ireland and we went from Southern Ireland, you know, south, and we hit a really big storm. Really big storm, scary storm. And, you know, where you're like at the helm and you hear at night and you hear the huge waves coming down and you're like, oh, I'm terrified. But the boat was a very safe boat. But we were sick for 48 hours, completely sick, and then switched off. And I was never, ever again sick on a sailing boat. Very interesting how the body mechanics, you know, get used to the rolling of a boat, you know, the movement.
So you're saying that I get altitude sickness pretty quickly. So if I stayed in somewhere where the elevation was high for a substantial period of time, my body would acclimate?
Yeah, it would acclimate if you stay. What you have to do is, you know, because I did quite a lot of mountain climbing. You have to go up to a certain, you know, I used to do, when I went to the Sierras, I would do a quick summit. So I wouldn't get, I would get altitude sickness, but then would go up, summit, come down. But if you want to do a big summit, yeah, you have to go to a base camp at, let's say, I'd say 10,000 feet or little above 10,000 feet. 11,000 is when you start really feeling the effects, depending on the person, actually. And yeah, I would say acclimatize 1 or 2 days. If it's a much bigger mountain, a week to 2 weeks, you know, when we're talking about Himalaya scale, which I've never done, which I would love to do, but I'm too old now. I think I'm too old. I've done, you know, big ones in South America, but so you need a few days, even a day or two, if you're doing, some mountains in the Sierras, which are, you know, 14,000 plus in the Sierra Nevadas, like of course, Whitney, Middle Palisade, the Palisades. There's many. There's 20 peaks above 14,000. And yeah, it's nice to get your first camp.
Right, Sebastian. Yeah. I get nauseous and lightheaded when I go to Big Bear. Do you know Big Bear?
Oh,
it's a two-hour drive from LA, and I'm like, I don't feel right. I don't feel right. Something's off. I'm like, can I possibly have altitude sickness? I mean, we're practically just north of LA. I mean, the elevation's
that's normal, but you would acclimatize because, you know, even if you go at the base of Baldy, you know,
right,
which at Baldy is 10,000 feet, you know, and Mount Baldy is a common trek. If you go at the base, it's 6,500 and you do start feeling, you know, of course, if it seems like you're more susceptible to altitude sickness, but if you stay there a day, you'd be fine, I think. You'd feel nauseous at first. You might have diarrhea, headaches. Yeah, you know, it's not really pleasant.
Well, the diarrhea, but I welcome that. That's not a problem for me. Let me ask you, what do you do, by the way, on a boat for 21 days? What do you do with your brother? Well, you have a sister and your mom and dad?
Yeah. No sisters, two brothers.
Two brothers.
Three boys, mom and dad.
What do you do for 21 days on a sailboat together? I mean, wait, you can only fish so much. I mean, there's a bathroom in underneath. So you went to the bathroom there.
Yeah. So you have what they call the head.
The head.
It's called the head. And yeah, and it's a pump action.
So you pump your duty right into the ocean, right?
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah. In those days you did, because now people have holding tanks.
Right.
That you empty, which is not very pleasant, especially when the holding tank starts leaking. You want to have a good holding tank.
Yeah.
But, you know, you really, it's funny. There's so much to do on the boats where you wake up. Most of the time, actually, we'd get flying fish on the deck. So we'd collect the flying fish, you know, have them for breakfast. Then, you know, I really personally would love to be on the bowsprit, which is the front of the boat, and sit there, you know, with the sails and just look at the ocean. because anything becomes interesting when you're in the middle of the ocean. So suddenly you'll see, seaweed, or you'll see a jellyfish. Everything becomes a moment of excitement. And, you know, I would draw whatever I saw because I was really into drawing. You read a lot and you fish. You know, we'd get, what they call doradas there, which is mahi-mahi.
Right.
We'd get nearly one a day. We couldn't actually, we did one, once we had too many, we'd throw the fish.
So you
back,
had a lot of mercury in your bodies for this. Right.
Well, there was a bit less then. You're right. Yeah. A lot of mercury. You're right. Probably.
Did you see sharks?
Yes. Yeah. I saw a lot of sharks. I mean, once we got to the Caribbean, I was terrified of everything as a kid. And then the boat kind of changed everything for me. It was really the most formative experience for me because I was not very good at school, super insecure, shy guy, not really good. I was really good at sports, but quite fearful. And, I discovered my, quote unquote, myself on the boat. You know, I developed a passion for spearfishing. So I would go and shell collecting. So I would go every morning, and I would go get whatever fish they wanted or lobster. And I became really good at it. I started, free diving when I was, I think, 13, 14. And I could go to 90 feet, once I got really good at it, I could stay quite a long time underwater. And I saw, of course, when you go spearfishing, you will see sharks, But in those days in the Caribbean, I don't know what it's like now because it's...
Sharks just weren't interested back in the day.
They were well-fed. Sharks were like,
oh, it's a different time now.
Then they learned how stupid humans were and they were like, let's get them.
Oh, could you imagine? That's amazing. It was just, sharks
really
are so
fascinating.
Nice.
Yeah, fascinating to see a shark when you're underwater. It's fascinating. I always remember there was a shark. My dad was facing me. And there's this lemon shark that comes behind my dad. And I'm like, because, you got the tuba, the snorkel.
How big is a lemon shark real quick? You're thinking small.
It can go from anything from, from 3 to 8 feet.
Oh, God. Okay, so you're, dad.
Yeah, so I'm like, But the lemon shark couldn't care less. He was just swimming. When you're spearfishing, it's different. We were just swimming, snorkeling at the time. When you're spearfishing, you spear the fish, then you put them on a floater and you put them on the floater so they smell the blood and they can get a little excited. So you have to show them that you have a gun, a spear gun, and move them away sometimes. But, and then when people would visit us on the boat from Paris, I remember taking one of my friends who was such a scaredy cat, and we'd go to nurse sharks, which are basking sharks. They sit on the bottom,
right,
and we prod them we'd get them above a nurse shark, prod the nurse shark, and the nurse shark would just run away, but we try and scare our friends.
Jesus.
Doing these kind of stupid things.
It sounds to me like your parents turned you into a man by being on a sailboat. I bet that had a lot to do with how you grew up and becoming a man, because I don't remember my dad teaching me anything. Like, he didn't teach me how to change the oil in the car. He didn't teach me says, mow the lawn, and he didn't even have a freaking get a grass catcher. So all that dog shit and rocks would fly in my face.
I know those.
He was always working. So he didn't have time to, he wasn't a head of a CEO, head of a company CEO and be able to buy a big sailboat and go out. But I think did you not learn a lot, which helped kind of create the man you are now?
Yeah, but I mean, I learned that on the boat, because before that, I never saw my dad. Never saw my dad.
Wow.
He was working for an American company because Young and Rubicam, I never saw him. So that's why I think on the boat, by forces of circumstance, being on the boat, you learn to sail. And sailing is very arduous. It's not easy. It's tough. You can be in really tough conditions and you have to learn very quickly how to steer a boat, how to hoist the sails, drop anchor, And you get into, you know, sticky situations when you're in high seas, you know, and stormy seas. It's a tough environment, but you learn very, very fast. And yeah, thanks to my dad's decision, I learned to be much more
self-reliant, or just...
Yes, that's one thing I really learned. I was super self-reliant, super agile. I could adapt to any situation suddenly.
Wow.
Whereas I never felt that in my sort of quote unquote civilian life, you know, when I was going to school and I didn't really, I felt I fit in because I was, you know, I wanted to be an actor. So I guess I was the clown, the class clown, but it was really the boat, the trip on the boat and discovering new cultures that turned me, you're right, into the man I am today. Yeah. It was a very, very formative, important experience for me. Yes. Especially, yeah.
I love that. Do you feel like you're like you hinted about it? You sort of said in a way that you didn't really have a relationship with your father at first, and then he has this life change, this idea, and you go in the boat. Was it like, did you sort of resent your father for a while? He's not around, he's not there, and then all of a sudden you get in a boat and it was a little tumultuous at first, and then it became this relationship. It sounds like a movie, but like, was it?
You know, that's a really interesting question because it's funny because it's kind of the opposite. It's the opposite and the same. Before, when I never saw him, I did. I idolized the image of my father, you know, because he's never there. So you always see this, you know. And in those days, growing up in France, you know, fathers were much more severe and earnest, and you know, he was the man of discipline, you know, and not abusive at all, but you know, he was much more stern. I had a much sterner image of him. And then when we went on the boat, then you're confronted with being with your parents in a small space for 24/7. So I admired him and resented him at the same time,
right?
Because I saw there was nothing hidden anymore. You know, when my dad woke up in our house and put on his beautiful suits and everything, I was like, wow, look at my dad. And then you are confronted with the absolute reality of literally being in the next cabin as your dad on a boat that is 44 feet long. So there was a mixture of, you know, you're growing up as a teenager, of resentment and admiration at the same time.
That's crazy.
And it's only later that I realized how extraordinarily brave it was for him to do what he did. And he kind of did it for us, for himself, of course. It was his dream, but he did it for us. And I also admire my mother's resilience, who was not really a sailor, but she's incredibly giving and tough in the sense that she can withstand anything. Not tough as a person, she's incredibly giving and positive. So you see all these things combined, and I think I learned the most because my older brother, you know, didn't get along with my dad, left the boat at 17 and went to do his military service.
Wait, he left the boat. So how long was this whole trip on the boat, and how long did your brother last before he said, I'm done?
Well, it lasted for nearly 6 years. So within 2 years, my older brother was like, I'm out of here. I can't stand being with you. I'm gone. And nothing against him. He was just going through his stage.
Yes.
And he went, and you know, we were in Martinique. It was kind of our base, you know, because my dad could find a job because we were broke. So he became a guide, tour guide. I was a windsurfing instructor. You know, I was like 13, 14 teaching windsurfing. My mom was repairing sails. And, you know, we'd get like 30 francs, which is what, $6. And we'd go buy camembert and a baguette. And my mom, I remember, would make a cucumber salad and avocados because, you know, the food is plentiful there.
Wow.
So my brother left quite early, and my younger brother, you know, couldn't deal with homeschooling. So he was sent to boarding school. So for around nearly 3 years, it was me and my parents on the boat.
Wow.
I think I'm the one who adapted the best. I don't know why.
Wait a minute. So your dad, when he decided to do this, he was the head of a CEO. He was making great money, and he left all that.
He was making good money. I don't think he was making great money. I mean, you know, we were very comfortable. Yeah. We had a beautiful house. But, you know, it was, at the time, it was France. It was not. Yeah, I mean, it was good money, but it was, you know, yeah.
But then you went to broke.
Well, yeah, because then basically he put everything in the boat, and he kind of miscalculated. So he spent a lot of money on the boat. And then, we kind of went broke. You know, living on a boat, buying a boat from scratch is very expensive. And we went broke very quickly. But it was actually the best thing that happened to us.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I don't know how many times I have to talk about this, but it's so important. If you're sitting there right now and you're stressed or you're anxious or you have a lot on your mind and you just bottle it up and you don't know what to do, it's going to come out, and it's not going to come out in great ways all the time. BetterHelp has helped me substantially. Ryan here has been using it for a while. And I, you know, don't you notice when you don't use BetterHelp? When you don't have therapy?
Oh, the weeks where I miss a session? Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the more you talk about something, even if you don't think you have anything to talk about, things come up and it puts your mind at ease. And we all carry around different stressors, you know, big and small. And at times we keep carrying them around rather than processing them and letting them go. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
Therapy from BetterHelp is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's for all of us. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. I think people think, oh, what if I don't like my therapist? If you don't, you switch them. It's that easy. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/inside today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/inside. Inside of You is brought to you by Rocket Money. I love Rocket Money. You know why? Because everyone should have Rocket Money, because it just helps you save money. How many times do we have subscriptions that we don't even know we have anymore, and we're paying so much money? It's just throwing away money, Ryan.
I found one.
You did it. You told me. I got Rocket Money.
Okay, I found one. I'm embarrassed to say how long it's been going on, but thank you for finding it. My God, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, because it's like you want to watch some show and you go, I have to subscribe to this this streaming whatever. Mm-hmm. And you start streaming the show, you watch it, you leave, and you forget after this trial period it kicks in and they're charging you $10 a month. It is embarrassing.
Ugh.
You know, 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about. Before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had, you know, like, oh, I have like 5 subscriptions. I could not believe it when they showed me I was paying for like 4 extra between, you know, streaming devices and fitness apps, delivery services. It's never ending. And thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features.
Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lowering your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. And I like that.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/inside. That's rocketmoney.com/inside. rocketmoney.com/inside.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
You know, sometimes I have guests on where I'm like, I'm so envious. I think if I would have learned these skills as a child and, you know, hands on and just in nature and life, and then I would be more, adept, more.
Yeah, I guess so. But you're extremely, on the other hand, you know, there are things that I find brilliant about you. You're much more adept at you know, you're very quick. You're very smart. I'm not saying I'm not smart, but what I'm saying
you're smart.
No, what I'm saying is, no, you are smart.
You're smart
and you're really funny. You know, you're super quick. And I really appreciate that very much. That's something, and I love having a good laugh, and I love a great sense of humor. You know, the one thing I became very adept and adaptable, and but there was a lot that I lost being among my peers. So when I at 18, I did my final year. I went back to France. I did it in France because, you know, it was easier. It was really hard for me to adapt to city life, to also being amongst people and the pressures of, you know, cliques and cliques or whatever you
call them.
So I basically was always first degree. You know, for me, I didn't understand irony and sarcasm, and I went back to Paris, of all places, you can imagine. So that was, I had to readjust that. I was very good at, you know, taking care of myself, but city life was kind of foreign to me. So, you know, there are advantages, but, you know, at the same time, you know, when you live a social life within your school, within your city, you learn other great skills, you know, that I still, I guess, don't have, I think.
I think it's, I bet it's a turn on, not only to me, but to, like, when you meet women and you're like, you know, tell me about yourself. It's like, well, I was on a sailboat for 6 years.
Oh my God. You're beautiful. That
it
sounds
was
so
later on when I had, you know, reconciled the two, you know, but I was incredibly innocent at 18. I was like, literally, like, I felt I was like, you know, something out of Jean-Jacques Rousseau's Emile. You know, it's this novel about this kid who's only lived in nature and is completely innocent.
Right.
I really felt like that. I was so innocent. And I think it attracted certain type of woman. But yeah, it was very interesting that it was difficult when I went to drama school, where there is a lot of not fighting, but a lot of, how shall I put it?
Just competition.
So much competition and very insidious competition. So that was very difficult for me, going to these schools, because I went to three different, actually. The first one was, you know, to get into the big schools. Yeah. And, you know, in those days, you know, to answer your question from quite a bit ago, yes, I had difficulty in controlling my emotions. I was very much, as I say, first degree. I was a bit, you know, all over the place. Excitable, had a very quick temper, you know, typically that the French blood in me took over the sort of a phlegmatic British.
That probably helps with acting, though, being able to be like, would you shut the fuck up?
Yeah, do like a, hey, do a Al Pacino, you know, when he's like, well, I'm gonna tell you.
Exactly, like he has no teeth. Exactly.
When he goes, hey, you wanna die? You're gonna die big time.
That's pretty good.
Well, that was my first gig, you know, first gig in the States when I moved to New York.
Was what?
Was doing a play with Al.
What play did you do with him?
I didn't
do my research.
Salome by Oscar Wilde. I played John the Baptist, Yohanan, and he was Herod. And for me, for a kid from France, you know, who idolized De Niro, Pacino, who were, you know, seen as gods, all of us, to do that in, I mean, that was not my first gig. It was my first theater gig in New York. That was extraordinary. I learned so much from him.
Now, and did he ever say anything to you? Like, hey, nice job. It was great.
He was really, he was lovely. He was really a really nice man.
Wow.
Very, so, you know, I've rarely seen someone so imbued with the passion of theater and acting. He literally lives it, breathes it.
And this is 77. This is like the height of his, like, what?
not the hype, but like...
No. This was in 93.
Sorry. Yeah, I was thinking...
Because I was quoting Carlito's Way. That's why I brought it. In. Because You Want to Die Big Time was Carlito's Way. That's when Carlito's Way came
out. Carlito's Way is one of my favorite Pacino movies. I have a tattoo that says Blanco, and it's my...
Oh, my God.
Well, my grandmother lives in Florida. Her name's Blanche, and she's from the Bronx. But do you remember when he goes, hey, Carlito, remember me, Benny Blanco from the Bronx?
Benny Blanco, of course.
So I always would say, hey, Benny Blanco from the Bronx, where's my bagel and cream cheese?
Yeah.
And so there was a whole thing like that. But Carlito's Way was one of my favorite Pacino movies.
Amazing performance by him and Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, yeah.
And Sean Penn. Do you remember Sean Penn?
Yeah. The lawyer or something.
Leguizamo was Benny Blanco, right?
He was Benny Blanco.
Yeah.
Hey, Carlito, remember me, Benny Blanco from the Bronx?
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one who kills him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. Beautiful. Typical Brian De Palma, but beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful movie.
But working with Pacino, man. But to work with Pacino would be just like a dream. Any of those. I don't know if I could do it. I'd be like, I mean, I would do it, but like, I think the first couple of days would be like, I'm talking to Pacino. What's my line? What's my line? Pacino.
That's how it was. I was like, because, you know, Yohanan is in a prison and he's screaming at Pacino, you know, you're a heathen. He's like in this crazy state of, you know, being John the Baptist, and he's a sinner, you know, Herod is a sinner. I would just watch Al because I've never seen someone more loose on stage. You know, he would do anything. He would try anything. I would see him like literally do roll on the floor while doing his lines. He'd done it before, of course. He did many incarnations of Salome, but it was just fascinating to see him. His work with the prose, with the word is extraordinary. You know, his relationship to objects taught me so much. He would say, this, because he would do it like, he said, I'm going to do it like a Upper West Side Jewish lady. This pen that I have here. He would do these modulations. And it would be so amazing to watch. He had these huge monologues where they were fascinating because you never got bored because he would literally have this, he'd be this ruby. And then I don't know if you remember, he had this crazy, was like an over made up woman from the Upper West Side.
And, wow, that's incredible. Did you ever see him though? Did you ever see him like, well, I wouldn't say the word fail, but like while he's on set or on stage and he's working things out and this doesn't work and he's frustrated. Did you see those things?
Yeah, Looking for Richard. You mean the documentary? Or I saw him.
I mean, in real life, like did you?
Oh, he, in a way, you know, it's really interesting. He reminds me of that saying by Mandela, you know, I never lose. Either I win or I learn, which I love, which is one of my favorite sayings by Nelson Mandela, because you never see him get mad. He's always in relaxation. That's every time I see Al Pacino, you know, maybe younger, he was more tense, you know, but it's this inner tension. You know, when you see him in Dog Day Afternoon, it's like watching a ballet. It's this incredible relaxation that enables him to access something that where he never fails. So he'll try. He'll be like, I remember him being on his all fours with hands up in the air, like, I have a ruby. And, you know, he would just try shit. And
that's the key. Just keep trying, keep working things out.
And his approach to the word. I remember auditioning for then to do Mercutio. And I suddenly was like, you know, she is the fairy's midwife. And I started kind of doing Al with an English accent. And I suddenly approached the text like he did, and I felt, I just felt like it
freed you.
Inhabited me. I felt in such a great space because I realized, oh my God, he has this relationship to the word, and I got it instantly, and it was thanks to him. It was really all. I became a much better actor instantly after doing that play. It was fabulous.
Oh,
and then
I love
he, you know, he was wonderful. He came. Then I did a play with Julie Taymor, and he came. And he was like, Sebastian, that was great. You know, but they were going to do something. And then I got him to meet Julie. And then we did a reading of Titus Andronicus where it was Julie directing, Al as Titus, I was playing Demetrius, and then he brought in Kevin Spacey as Saturninus, you know, and it was one of the greatest readings I've ever, it was just extraordinary.
How many people were in the room?
I think it was just the cast and Al, and Al always had his bodyguard with him, what was his name, Tony or something, this big guy who was really cool, such a nice guy, who looked like he could have worked, you know, in a real insurance office. He was bald with a mustache, kind of heavy set. But it was amazing. Walking down the street, when we walked from the rehearsal space to another space, we'd walk down the street and it was like walking with QE2. You know, it was like walking with royalty. It was extraordinary.
Hey, how do you deal with rejection? Because obviously everybody, especially in our industry, that's what you do. We're rejected 99 times out of 100. So have you had a problem with it? Is there times where it really affects you for a long time after your...
Yeah, I think like a lot of us, I think when, you know, rejection is an extraordinary thing, actually. I always say that actors are kind of superhumans because they deal with rejection on such an extraordinary level. They basically are always unemployed and always looking for a new job, always deal with a rejection, then they get a job, of course. Therefore, are superhumans. In this pandemic, I think we adapted much better. But for me personally, yeah, rejection is very, very difficult. And you think as you get older, it's going to get better, and it's not. When you care about a project is when the rejection is the worst. And the closer you get to the project, it gets very difficult. Yeah, I remember auditioning for The Hobbit, and I auditioned when Guillermo del Toro was the director, auditioned in London. They loved me, then they brought me back. And then it switched. And then I thought I was really close. And then I met with, Peter Jackson, Philippa Boyens, Fran Walsh. And of course, the day I was at Shutters, you know, super nervous, wanting to audition for that role. And I thought I was, you know, I could taste it. You know what it's like when you can taste it.
Yeah.
When you're like, I'm going to be filming for 2 years in New Zealand with Peter Jackson, you know, on the heels of Lord of the Rings. And I go up to the room and I don't see Peter Jackson because he's sick in a bedroom. So I'm auditioning just for Fran Boyens and Philippa Boyens and Fran Walsh. And it's not the same because, of course, you want to
the energy, the there's almost that fear and that excitement that blends into a perfect, like, you know, whatever it is, explosion.
I hadn't pictured, you know, him working with me, and nothing against Philippa Boyens and Fran Walsh. They're both brilliant, but it was just not the same. And I know I did a good job because I, you know, it didn't work out because physically I saw the guy that they cast, and it was totally, and I know him, and it was absolutely evidence that he should get the part, but
it hurt,
man. And I heard about it through a friend of my actor friend who said, oh my God, he just got the greatest gig. He got this role in The Hobbit. And I was like, that's the role I was up for. And I literally, we were having dinner and I just couldn't have dinner anymore. And I was like, you know what, guys, I think I was, I went to bed and it took me like a few days. Yeah.
Well,
it's hard. Rejection's hard.
Yeah, it is. It is hard. But
what about you?
I'm weird. I am able to, as insecure and as I could tell you my flaws all day. If you listen to 5 episodes in this podcast, you'd be like, holy shit, you're fucked, bud.
But that's what's great.
But yeah, it is great at the same time.
I apologize for eating.
No, you could eat. But you know, for me, when I leave an audition, I rip up the sides, the pages, and I throw them away immediately. And I'm done.
I do that too.
I'm done, and I don't ask any more questions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't. And then all of a sudden, sometimes you'll hear my agent will go, hey, I want to let you know that you're in the running for this role that you auditioned for 3 weeks. And I go, don't tell me that. Just tell me when I get it.
Exactly.
So I don't want to know. So I let it go. I do let it go. But I think I'm my worst enemy. And I also think that I could be incredibly lazy. I don't like to, unless it's something I really love, I don't put the work in like I should. And that's just sort of in my head. I just like, you know, I'll give them what I, you know, I'm not going to give them everything, because I think if I give them everything, that takes away a piece of me. And that's really, it's a bizarre way. And it's like, well, how, well, good luck being an actor. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I'm going to do a good job. And if you see that I'm the part, and I, you know, there's every once in a while, I'll go above and beyond. Like, really?
Don't you think 99% of the time you walk in the room and they're like, this is the guy 100%. Even before you open your mouth?
100, that, then that's why I stopped doing that. I think I walk in and I, you know, if they're like, oh, then they'll, you know, they'll work with me and then we'll figure it out. But
oftentimes when I don't care, when I'm like,
always,
it's not true because I got this part. I worked on it. Yeah. But you know what? You know, when a part instantly suits you and you basically have to do hardly any work.
Yeah. Right? Those are rare, but they're nice.
And then you walk in and, you know, I remember walking and there was this whole room of actors who were really, you know, established. And it's tough sometimes. You see all these near stars, and but I, you know, sometimes when you own it, you own it. Yeah, there are days when you own it. Yeah,
that's true.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories, and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Bleav Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Also, and we don't have to talk about it. You can tell me to fuck off. But I know you look, we talked about it briefly while we were in Wales.
Yeah.
But I know, like, you got divorced, obviously. Now you found now you found the one, and you guys are doing great. But I remember you saying, because I was shocked. I was like, Vera Farmiga.
I
remember going, what? You were married to Vera Farmiga? She's one of my... Oh my! And I'm like, he doesn't want to hear this. What
are you doing? No, it's fine, actually. You know, tremendous actress. You know, we met at the, you know, at her beginnings, and you know, when I was doing this extraordinary series called Roar,
R-O-A-R.
Not really a great series to promote, Roar for Fox. You know, in which the cast of Roar: Heath Ledger, Kerry Russell, Vera, myself.
Wow.
And some other people. So, no, it's fun. I can talk about it. You know, I've now found someone who's extraordinary, my wife now. But, you know, we were young. You know, these things happen. And, and you move on.
I mean, it's got to be the worst, though. I always think, you know, the reason I'm not married, a lot of people go, why aren't you married? You're 48, dude. I'm like, well, have you met my family? I'm like, you know, I love my family, but I look around me and if there's dysfunction and then there's divorce and there's I'm like, I'm not doing that unless I know it's right. So, you know, it sounds like you obviously came from a good family and you had this bonding experience for years and years. And when you were getting married, it felt like, I mean, I read that you guys eloped and went to.
Yeah.
And just
to the Bahamas. And then we actually, and honeymoon in Cuba. But, you know, it was difficult. You know, I had my issues, you know, she had her issues. It's, you know, the competition enters the marriage a bit always. It's difficult. Divorce is probably one of the most difficult experiences I went through. Yeah. In my life. Absolutely.
See,
extremely difficult.
See, that's why I don't know if I want to do that. Because
I understand, but I think, you know, as you get older, you actually gain more experience, and you know, you suddenly, you know, you don't always know when you're younger what's right for you, you know. And I think as you get older, you realize, you know, you get rid of the things you don't want, and you keep the things you want, you know. And that's what getting older is. You start caring less about the bullshit. And you start caring more about what's important. And when you meet that person who is completely in tune with you, is, you know, incredibly supportive, smart, funny, intelligent, Yeah, there are people out there.
Do you have
like
to have all of those? That seems like it's asking a lot.
And beautiful.
Smart, beautiful, educated. I mean, you know, they're just like, you know, it's like, I'm not all those things. So why should I?
Well, no, yeah, you are. You, of course you are. It's, you know, my wife, Alicia, has taught me so much, literally more than anyone else in my life about relationships. She really is so extraordinarily, I mean, she has such an extraordinary sense of self and confidence. And I think that was given to her by her parents and her upbringing in Australia. And so she, yeah, taught me so much about, you know, listening, because that's something I was not very good at, about compromise. You know, it's very difficult to be in a relationship. It is, you know, however much you love, you know, we love each other like crazy. We're literally joined at the hip. And actually this pandemic has made us way closer.
Awesome.
We're crazy. I'm crazy about her. I really am. But in the deepest possible way, she's my girl, you know.
Your anchor.
It makes me emotional. It makes me really emotional because we're joined at the hip and nothing could break that. And, you know, and this pandemic has made it stronger.
Yeah.
And I learned so much from her. And, you know, she must have learned something from me, but I learned so much and I made so many mistakes.
Sure.
When I was younger. And that is what life is. You know,
yeah.
Some people are like, I don't want to age. What age brings is that, doesn't it? It brings that wonderful level of experience where you feel more secure about yourself and you start caring less about what's bullshit. You know?
It's, I keep thinking about that. I keep thinking that I'm slowly, I see that happening with me, that I'm starting to just be a little more. At times I see it like, okay, this is good. This is new you. It's a nuance. Don't get cocky. It's just a little thing here, but you know, you're kind of a little bit more relaxed with this situation. You're not freaking out. You're not. And my, one of my therapists said something, he goes, you know, Michael, I love this little guy. He was like Dr. Yeah. Tesler.
Yeah.
I loved him so much. I forgot his fucking name. But as he said, Michael, when I really believe when you fall in love with someone and you allow them to love you, and it's going to be very tough when you could really, really allow, I think you're going to soar. I think you're going to really. And I go, I didn't understand that. And do you feel like when you have, what is it about love? What is it about? It may sound corny, but what is it about a connection joined at the hip? These sort of phrases, these sort of ideas that makes you a better person and makes you soar. Do you think that's true? And that it does that?
I think it's absolutely 1000% true. You know, I think, first of all, it's support and trust and family, you know, in the great sense of family. You create your new family. You know, I'm spending more time with my wife than I ever spent with my family, you know, post leaving at 18. It really, being with Ali, it took me a few years. I was still my own demonic self. You know, after my marriage, I went through a period of a very self-destructive period of, you know, being single and being,
you just didn't love yourself.
And I went through a period of kind of a dark period. And Ali, I met Ali before we were together. We knew each other for 6 years. But when I met her, I was like, this girl is the one. That's the one. But, you know, I wasn't ready. She suddenly was like, stay away from me. You're a bad boy.
Yeah.
You're trouble. And, you know, the first few years of our relationship, I really had to learn a lot. I had to learn to compromise a lot. Compromise is actually a beautiful thing. It really enables you to listen to yourself in a way, and to listen to your partner, which is one of the most important things there is. But I do believe that a partnership And yet, you know, then love becomes, love is always there. It just, it sort of transforms itself into something deeper. There's love, there's that, oh my God, consuming love and sex and everything, which is fantastic. And then it transforms into something so deep, so profound, you know, and it turns into this beautiful love, lover, friendship, partnership that is unbreakable. You know, I'm, you know, knock on wood, but I really feel it makes you also, it makes you not question things. You know, you become a husband, and then you meet people, you know, because there are temptations and everything, but no, you just always, you will always be the husband. You'll be like, yeah, you're a very interesting, attractive person, but you know what? I'm married to my wife, and you know what? What she gives me is 1 million percent better than anyone else that comes in front of my path. So I'm not even going to go there, and then I will be, I suddenly become a husband, like a dad, you know, and I do it, and it becomes natural because this is who I've become, and I'm proud of it. And I'm not one of, you know, I never understand people who are like, oh, well, you get married and then, oh, no, my God, what a profound experience.
I love it.
I mean, may I, you know, I'm sorry, I'm diverging. I'm not really responding.
I'm learning. This is learning.
Sore. And Ali, with her support, has made me soar beyond my wildest expectations as a man, because the most important is as a man, you know, as an actor, as an artist. So, yeah.
I love, you know, Sebastian, I love that you were so open about that, and that resonates. This is called Shit Talking with Sebastian Roche. This is rapid fire from my patron family. If you want to join patrons, patreon.com/inside of you. So really quick, Lisa H, I was introduced to you through Supernatural, but I've started watching older TV shows where you show up. In your extensive career, which role, no matter how small, was your favorite role to play?
One of my favorite roles was this role I played on The Man in the High Castle, deeply, deeply flawed, conflicted person called Martin Heussmann. It was kind of a turning point in my career in terms of bringing everything down. And, you know, the challenge of speaking German when I lied about speaking German,
Sprechen Sie etwas
and
Deutsch?
Working on it to be perfect. And also the incredible complexity of the character. So, you know.
Sprechen Sie etwas Deutsch? Können Sie lesen und schreiben? Oder sind Sie ein einbauen, Jünger, mit nur einem Sprachnamen?
Sprechen Sie Deutsch? Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch.
Bisschen Deutsch.
But not very good.
Yeah, me too. Not very much. Danny.
Oh, you do.
I have a good ear.
Yeah.
So that's, I remember, great. I had an audition for a movie, and I memorized it, the German, and for the audition. I remember, and I went in there, and I went, I started, you know, doing it. And he goes, oh, no, I want you to hear you in English. I go, no, but it said I just spent 4 days learning this shit, you fucking idiot.
Oh, no.
Fuck.
Yeah, because Rosenbaum means...
red tree.
Red tree,
Rosenbaum.
Red
also,
tree.
I remember living in near the Friedensengel and Prinzengartenstraße and Hogestraße in München.
And
it did. By the way, I'm Jewish, so my grandparents didn't love me like doing this accent constantly in front of them. They're like, yeah. "All right, we get it. You can do a German accent." They were fine. Danny, I love Sebastian. What was his favorite moment as Balthazar on Supernatural?
My favorite moment as Balthazar on Supernatural was, you know, being with the guys, Jared Jensen, Misha. The whole crew, you know,
they loved you. Rob and Spate, I talked to them before, and they're like, oh my God, the guy's great. And they said a few things. So
the guy, yeah. I mean, Robin, I mean, you know, the most wonderful thing actually was coming into the family, because then we all became friends, and we started doing fan events. And as you know, when you start doing fan events with cast members, it becomes like a big theatrical troupe.
Yeah.
And you get to know people intimately, and it's, you go to these wonderful places. So, yeah, I mean, that was the greatest experience. You know, the role was super fun.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, being welcomed into the family.
This is from Steph. And then the second part of the question is from Jennifer N. So Steph A and Jennifer N. Do you have any desire to return to General Hospital, or is that behind you? And if you could work with anyone from General Hospital in a movie, who would it be and why?
Well, I think General Hospital is behind me. You know, it was actually one of the best decisions, funnily enough, that I made in my career in 2007. You know, I turned it down. I was like, I'm a theater actor. I don't do soaps. Then I took it, and it completely changed my career. acting wise too, because I experimented so much. I did, you know, a few hundred episodes. So it was a great memory, great character. They let me do anything I wanted. They couldn't have been nicer with me.
Wow.
I love Nancy Lee Grahn on General Hospital. I'd love to work with her again.
Awesome.
She's a character.
Michelle Kay. Is it Mikhail or Michael?
Michael.
They spell
well, it's
it
actually
wrong.
It would be Mikhail Mikhailson because he's of Scandinavian origin.
Well, she loved you, Michael, on Vampire Diaries and Originals. Speaking of which, any chance we might see you again on see you on Legacies?
I don't know. That's up to Julie Plec. Loved playing that character. Very extreme character. I would put him up there in the complex characters that I played.
Richard T., all the projects you've been in over the years, which one stands out for you the most?
Again, I think,
Man in the High Castle.
In terms of production, it was like shooting a movie every episode.
It was.
The content, of course, is a bit difficult, but, quite extraordinary.
Well, this is, I came up with a new game here. This is called Roche. So each sentence starts out with a letter of your last name, then R-O-C-H-E. So for instance, these are my questions. Yeah. The raddest set piece or prop or something you kept from a set.
Oh my God. Wait, which one? The raddest set piece. Do you know what? I don't know because I don't think I've ever taken a set piece. I've taken clothes.
Well, what when piece of clothing?
When I was doing Odyssey 5, I had these beautiful clothes that they gave me, you know, that I didn't steal them. You know, they gave me all these Prada.
Well, I stole things.
Clothes.
I stole
yeah, so
things.
I guess that's it.
I stole things. Oh. What are you OCD about? The one thing you're OCD about?
Super OCD about cleanliness and putting things away. Super.
good. C. This is the C in Roche. Can you sing? I want you to sing, or at least the line, the first 80s song that comes to mind. Anything that comes
don't
to mind.
Don't you want me, baby?
Humanly, good God.
Don't you want me?
That's playing on my.
I was working
in a waitress in a cocktail bar
when I met you.
Dude,
I wanted to be
awesome.
Phil. What was his? Phil Air? Yeah, Phil.
It was the Human League. Lead singer was.
Human League, yeah. What's his name?
Phil Oki. Remember.
Phil Oki.
I remember. I'm only human.
I'm only. And then I loved Midge of Ultravox. I don't know if you know.
Oh, yeah.
This means nothing to me. Oh, Vienna.
Oh, yeah. I love that song. I'm going to write that down again. Ultravox. That's right.
Vienna.
Vienna. Okay, the
and H. Of course, I wanted to be Bono because, you know, I was like.
You could play Bono.
Yeah.
By the way, H for Roche. Have you ever kissed someone on the set that had bad breath, and what did you do about it?
Oh yes, I did. I basically couldn't. You know, I felt. You know, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, you can. You can go to the makeup artist and their makeup artist and just say, "Hey, can you offer her a mint or some toothpaste, or him some toothpaste or a mint?" Or you could just say to the person, did you just have a shit sandwich? Yeah, that won't work. Okay. E.
No, I remember the first time it was a French TV series I did, and the girl was so beautiful and had the worst breath. But anyway.
Yeah, well, that sucks. E for O'Shea, last one. Ever been naked in a scene where you show your dong?
I was naked on stage where I showed my dong. And it was.
Is that the Al Pacino? Did Al Pacino see your dong?
No. Oh, he didn't see my dong in this. No, it was on in France. I was doing this play called L'Échange de Paul Claudel. And I made sure that the bath that I was coming out of was very warm. And I was very happy about it.
Yeah, look at this. This is
French. I am French after all.
I also know Rob Benedict and Richard Spate from Supernatural said, well, I know you speak English, French, Spanish, Italian. It's pretty amazing. How do you say kiss my ass in French?
You wouldn't say embrasse mon cul, you'd say va te faire foutre ou va te faire enculer, which means go get, well, can I say it?
Go get fucked?
Yeah, go get fucked up the ass, basically.
Oh, wow, you went extreme, I like that.
Sorry, yeah.
Spanish.
But in French, you know, we use slang a lot. I'm learning Korean, by the way, at the moment.
Let me hear something in Korean.
안녕하세요, 저는 세바스티안 로쉐, 저는... pan Poranse pan Yongguk Saramyeo.
That's awesome.
That means I'm Sebastian Rocher. I'm half French, half British. person.
Kiss my ass in Spanish.
I mean, I don't know if you. Yeah.
I'd say get fucked in the ass. Just say get.
Joder. What?
I say just say get effed in the butt again in Spanish. That's probably easier.
In Spanish, I think there's a joder. And then what is it in Spanish? In Spanish, shit, there's cállate tu boca.
Wow.
Porque podemos hablar español también. Porque aprendí español en la escuela en Francia.
Damn, he's quick.
I learned that at school. I learned Italian too at school. And I love speaking those, you know, it's like vaffanculo in Italian, you know.
Right. How do you say in Italian, my name is Sebastian and I'm the coolest guy in the world?
In Italian? Mi chiamo Sebastiano Rocher. Sono una persona veramente stupenda.
That sounds amazing. I love it.
When we go on fan events, all the guys like Rob, everyone's like, okay, Sebastian, you do it.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass. You're smart. Lastly, you know, Benedict told me this, that you and your brother learned every capital to every country in the world. Is that true?
Yes, it's true. Because, you know, on the boat, what I read was the almanac and the atlas, you know, so yeah.
So if I said, good. What's the capital of Uganda?
It's Kampala.
What's the
but I went there.
What's the capital of Brazil?
Brazil is actually Brasilia, not Rio de Janeiro.
Look at that. What's the capital of Uruguay?
Uruguay is Montevideo.
Gosh, what is going on? You really are. You're bright. You are bright. You don't even have the looks. You have the brightness. It's pretty amazing.
I don't know about that, but.
Well, man.
You know, the thing is, I spent a lot of time reading books on the boat. It was amazing. It was my grandfather. I have my granddad to thank for that. He would send packets of books, you know, what they call post restaurant at the mail place in, you know, West Africa, and we'd pick them up, and then he'd send them to the Caribbean in some Caribbean places, and I'd pick them up. Yeah, it was great.
Well, look, this has been so much fun. I'm so glad we finally got to talk.
Me too. Me too. Because I always love your podcast. You know,
thank
I always
you.
Love you know, and you're such a good, you know, you ask always such interesting questions. You know,
I think I just want to have fun. I want to like when I like someone, I just want to talk. You know, the best compliment is somebody said, it's just like listening to two people just have a real conversation. And that's the best compliment you can give, because I don't want to feel like I'm interviewing you. I'm almost like a kid in a candy store going, well, what about this? Well, Dad, how much longer do we have? Well, what about the boat? How long were you on the boat? Like, it's just things
I love that it's stream of consciousness. That's what I, because it's like we're having lunch and we're just having conversation.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I love this. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you. I hope you come back. And what are your handles so people can follow you and all that?
My handles, so on Instagram, I'm at Sebastian Roche, R-O-C-H-E. And on Twitter, I'm at Seb Roche. And that's it, because I got rid of Facebook and I don't want to be on TikTok.
Yeah, I'm not on TikTok. I can't go there yet. I just don't know. I can't waste any more time. Yeah.
But thank you, Michael. It was really a real pleasure. And, you know, you're a great guy.
Hey, back at you.
Smart, funny, and very caring, which is extremely important.
Well, it's important to me to hear that, and thank you so much. And give your wife a big kiss. And I hope you guys have many, many good years together.
Yeah, you too. And let's hang out one of these days.
I'd love to. Once this is all over, man, I'm gonna be hanging with everybody. They're gonna get tired of me.
Yeah, no,
they're already tired of me. All right, buddy, I love you.
Take care, mate. Love you too, mate.
You're right. That was a great episode.
It's just a good story you don't get out of a lot of people, you know? Mm.
So I love stories, and I just kept picking them on it. Like, I want to know more. I want to know more. How is this possible? I'm telling you, I go on a trip with my, you know, I remember as with my parents. It's just like, even now when I go see, I love my parents, you know, but if I go see them, I mean, 2 days is enough. I'm good. It's great to see you. I can't spend more time with that. I think it's not only that I can't, they can't. I feel like they're tired of me within an hour. It's like, you know, just it feels like, you know, I'm not wanted. It feels like I don't think you want to be here anymore. I think we had a hug and we had dinner and then next day we went swimming. And I think that you're kind of done. And that makes me feel like I'm kind of done. So I don't know. Like I said, I love my parents, but good on you, Sebastian. Thank you guys so much for all the love on the show.
Again, if you want any awesome merch, go to the Inside of You online store. You can get merch 15% off. Ryan's Waxed 15, no apostrophe. And you can get stuff like Smallville lunchboxes and t-shirts and tumblers and hats and all sorts of stuff. And also the Sunspin band. If you go to sunspin.com, you can get a bunch of Sunspin merch. You can book the band. You can book a Zoom there. Our next stage it is the last Saturday of the month, which will be 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. And that is that's going to be a good time. So if you want to join Patreon, it's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Join, and I'll message you right after. It's a great family. There's lots of perks. There's a bunch of stuff. I think you're going to really dig it if you want to help the podcast a little more. That's patreon.com/insideofyou. Patreon.com/insideofyou. And of course, the handles for the podcast, Ryan.
At Inside of You Pod on Twitter, at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
Yes, please, please follow us and spread the word. And you can watch on YouTube and listen on Spotify and Apple and all that stuff. Stitcher. It's really a good time. Why don't I read the top patrons? These are people who they give back in a big way to the podcast. And they've been around a while. And how about a round of applause for them? And now for a special effect sound effect applause. Which one sounded better? Here we go. Nancy.
D.
Mary.
B.
Leah.
S.
Trisha.
F.
Sarah.
V.
Little.
Lisa.
Yukiko. Jill.
E.
Brian H. Lauren G. Nico P. Robin S. Jerry W. Robert B. Jason W. Apothean. Kristen K. Not to be confused with Kristen Krug. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amelia O. Allison L. Lucas M. Raj C. Joshua D. Emily S. CJP. Samantha M. We got Jennifer N. Jackie P. Stacy L. Carly H. Carly S. Jen S. Jamal F. Janelle B. Carrie B. Tabitha 272. Not to be confused with
Tabitha 273.
Ashley Ryan. Kimberly E. Mike E. Marissa N. Eldon Supremo 99 more. Ramira. Santiago M. Sarah F. Chad W. Leanne P. Ray A. Maya P. Maddie S. Kendrick F. Ashley E. Shannon D. A lot of patrons love. You gotta join us here on this lovely Patreon. Patreon.com/insideofyou. Matt W. Belinda N. Kevin V. James R. Chris H. Dave H. Spider-Man Shay. Sheila G. Ray H. Tabitha T. Tom N. Suzanne B. Katie F. Liliana A.
Water break.
Michelle K. Marquez W. Hannah B. Michael S. Talia M. Luke H. And this is the last list right here. Andrew T. Betsy D. Claire M. Liz J. Laura L. Chad B. Rochelle E. Nathan E. Brandle D. Taylor K. Neil A. Marion A. Meg K. Janelle P. Trav L. Dan N. Jennifer J. Wayne M. Diane R. Ojeda Lorraine G. Olga C. Corey M. Carrie H. This list was once really short. Veronica K, Big Stevie W, Kendall T, Lindsay M, Carol D, Katie G, Sandy B, Angel M, Eric C, Rhiannon C, Stephen M, Corey K, Super Sam, Emily C, Sherry S, Coleman G, Michelle A, Riley J, Matt W, Liz L, Jeremy C, and Samantha S. That is a lot of patrons. It's a lot of patron love. We're going to do a Sunday jam session soon where my buddy Rob and I, we kind of play tunes that people, it's one of those things, Ryan, where it's you know, it's a YouTube live private event just for my patrons. Mm-hmm. And I see them all on there and we're commenting back and forth to each other and I'm answering their questions. And then they say, play this song. We kind of just improv a song. We'll look up the lyrics and we'll just play it. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun. That's one of the perks. And also top tiers get like boxes sent to them every couple of months and little notes from me. And there's a bunch of other stuff. But I really thank you guys for sticking with the podcast. I said it before, I'll say it again. Thank you, Cumulus. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Bryce. I love doing it. I want to keep doing it. Got a lot of great guests coming up. And Daddy needs a vacation. Daddy's going to take a vacation soon.
Ooh, Daddy's going to take a big vacation.
Well, I'm going to go see my grandma, and then I'm going to go stay with my friend Harlan in Florida for like a couple of days.
Florida?
So I got some friends staying at the house, and that's always tricky. But, you know, it's hard to leave my little Blanchie.
Yeah.
You know, that little puppy. Mm. But I just got to have guidelines and say, okay, you got to make sure. You know, mm-hmm. these are the things you got to make sure of. Mm-hmm. You know, it is tough, man. I love that little thing so much. And after Irv passed away, I think there's just more like,
yeah.
The other day I go, oh my God, I can't lose you. She looks at me and she's like, I'm 2.5. I don't think I'm going anywhere. What the fuck are you crying for? I'm like, because I lost Irv.
Because she was a teenager, huh?
I guess she is. I mean,
oh my God, Dad.
3 times 7 is 21, yeah. I guess, in dog years. Yeah. She'll be 21 July 11th, which is my birthday. Oh. Thank you for all the wishes. No, it's not yet. But thank you for another good week, Ryan. Another great episode. Thank you for working so hard. And from my home in the Hollywood Hills, I'm Michael Rosenbaum.
I'm Ryan Tails.
And wave to the camera.
Waving.
We love you. Be good to yourselves. You owe it to yourselves to be good to yourselves. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you. Be good. I'll see you next week. Please join me and write into the show. Hello at insideofyoupodcast.com. And I will do read them. See you later.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.